RadioInfluence.com. Podcasting redefined.
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 stories.
What truth?
Office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion. A lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high. They are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust.
To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out.
You take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red
pill. Nervous system of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy can't function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You gotta let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
What really happened.com.
You just believe.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
Still the best. Still the best talk show intro. I challenge all of you to find a better intro song for a kick-ass talk show. It's like you see everything in green. I feel like it's the first day of school and I gotta make sure I get on the right bus. I got my little name tag. Hi, I'm Scott. Make sure I get on bus number DC. You know, with different streaming softwares and different networks, it's hit or miss, I guess, the best way to put it. It's like you get early on in this amazing new world of the podcast, the broadcast, the streaming live show, combination of all the above. And you actually get a chance to get feedback on everything, you know. Believe me, you're going to find out who I am. This show should be called The Reference Show for RadioInfluence.com. Dangerous Conversations, Reference Show. Who's this Ledge dude? What's he about? We're going to answer all those questions tonight. It's like inside the actor's studio with no audience and no interviewer.
So tell me, why did you choose Dangerous Conversations? The title of your broadcast.
You get to know me. We got 2 hours. We're going to be here every Wednesday at RadioInfluence.com. Wait a minute. Those of you that like radio and like cool radio with like cheesy sound effects, so do I. So every time I say the name of this network, you'll hear this. And it's not that I'm scoring points. And it's not that... It doesn't really mean anything, honestly. It's not like we're keeping score at home or anything. If you are keeping score at home, let me know what the total is. Okay? RadioInfluence.com. See, I was just making sure it was working right there. Now I know it's working again. So I guess we should start at the beginning of, the fact I missed being a hippie by about 5 years. Born in 1961. Raised by an extremely Roman Catholic family. And I mean extremely. I mean, we didn't have like a torture chamber or anything. We didn't do that part of the Roman Catholicism. But my sister's a nun. She still is. She's 67. You're going to get to know me on this show, and then you're going to go, I really feel like I know this Ledge guy. Good, because my mind works like the ping pong ball inside the lottery machine. So you're just going to have to like try to connect the dots and fill in the blanks later. But I grew up in a really cool town, a little 8,000 people in it, a little farm town, potatoes and corn and nothing fancy. Grew up in Connecticut, surrounded by accents. Maine, Boston, Rhode Island, New York. Although, did you notice all of them sound like they're from New York? Yeah, okay. That's how good I am at accents, by the way. Well, in the little town I grew up in, Somers, Connecticut, no one had an accent. But if you went a little west, you got New York, you park the car, you go over there. I grew up without an accent in this little town. My brother was an electrician at the time. He's about 15 years older than me. He wants to be a DJ. He goes to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. I'm about 11 at the time, 12. He goes, hey, Scott, you want to come watch me practice? Yeah, okay. I don't know what he was talking about. So I get in his Firebird. He had a really cool 72 Firebird. We drive all the way to Hartford. We get into this big, tall building called the G. Fox Building. We go up to, I don't know, whatever floor it is. When we come off the elevator doors open. And it's like this long hallway, like in, I don't know, Barton Fink or something like that. At the end of the hallway, up above, is plexiglass or glass. Behind it is this foggy guy chain-smoking cigarettes, powerlifting coffee cups. And it says WDRC. And it says, on air, and I hear him, I'm Dick McDonough. And as he's talking, I hear it come out of the speakers in the hallway. And I'm like, I want to do that. I couldn't believe that magical moment. Now, unfortunately, my brother was making great money working for Pratt & Whitney. He couldn't quit the job with the pen, you know, all the things he had. He had a wife and a kid. So he never followed that DJ path. Well, I picked it up. And when I went to Connecticut School of Broadcasting, I was a senior in high school. Same summer I graduated high school. Same summer I go to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Get my first job at a country station in East Long Middle Mass. No biggie, you know, just being nervous on the air, playing commercials. This is Phil Rizzuto for the Money Store. You're listening to Yankees Baseball. And I get a chance to talk for 10 seconds. At the top of, let's pause now for stations to identify themselves. This is the New York Yankees Baseball Network. And I turn it on and go, Wings of 16 is WXY, Springfield, Massachusetts, and it's 72 degrees. And I turn the mic off, and I have to go change my underwear because I just shit my pants. But, I remember my mom going, I heard you, you know. When I went home, I heard you say something. And it was the first time I ever cracked a mic, 1980. Well, the neat thing was, right across the hallway was this legendary Top 40 station, mostly all automated with machines. It was called Wacky 102. Well, they changed their album rock and became Rock 102. So literally a five-step process from me being a country hick to being right across the hallway, meeting all the cool rock jocks I grew up listening to. They hijacked them from WCCC. Yes, that's where Howard worked. They hijacked them from HCN. I hijacked him from 99 Rock WPLR. These are legendary rock stations in Connecticut. And a lot of these guys, it was like this cool menagerie of jocks from three different stations. All I did was pick their brains. Peter Cole did afternoons at CCC. I grew up in high school listening to this guy. Now he's right here in front of me. And he's talking to me. And I'm like, dude, just say that one more time. Just say you're Peter Cole. I'm not saying there might have been some man... Definitely some man crushes, but there was a few. These were my radio heroes. So what happens is, program director says, I think you'd sound pretty good over here doing overnights. Our first rock gig, midnight to 6 a.m., playing vinyl, falling asleep several times. Nothing like waking up with your head, like your head's laying, leaning on a table and you're sleeping. And you wake up and your periphery, you're looking right at the turntable that's going and then you look over at the little timer that when you start the record player, the timer would go to zero and start counting up. And it says 42 minutes. Oh, shit. Let me see how much dead air is that. It's not technically dead air if you have. So I cut my teeth. This is the farm team of baseball. This is college football for the pros in the NFL. You learn your craft, and you pick other people's what they do well, and you apply it. Ended up going from overnights to nights to afternoons. Was there about 6 years. Dropped a tape down at Zeta in Miami. They were turning back to a rock station. Got a gig there. Didn't like South Florida. Neither did the X. And I liked Florida, but I didn't like South Florida. So it was a one-year spot on the resume, and I ended up relocating in Tampa. This is where I'm sitting right now, in St. Pete. And I dropped, I still remember the Friday. I drove, I was young, and I was single. And my roommate at the time and I had this blue Chevy van with Krager Mag wheels, you know. And I swear to God, it had shag carpet. It wasn't the Shagmobile. It was the fuck truck. Okay. That's what we called it. All right. And I remember driving up over to the Kroger Center where the legendary 95 YNF was. The ultimate station everybody wanted to work for. The one I'd read about in radio and records every single week. And they're playing softball with Bon Jovi. I'm up here in Springfield, Mass. Playing Pat Benatar. Something's wrong. I had sent, I don't know how many tapes to Kerry Kurlop. He was the PD at the time. I dropped a tape off with Bo Raines at 98 Rock, which was WKRL. They were classic rock at the time. I dropped a tape off at YNF on a Friday. My phone rang on a Monday. It was Bo Raines. Yo, Scott, it's Bo Raines here, program director over here at WKRL. And I like your sound, and I was wondering... Maybe we can get you in to do some weekends here. Jethro Tull, Jethro Tull, Jethro Tull. He liked a Tull a little too much. So I used to give him shit when I used to play. I was like, geez, Bo, only 3 Tull tracks and 1 show? Thanks. But he was a nice guy. Well, not too far down the road, KRL becomes WXTB, where Tampa Bay rocks. XTB rocks Tampa Bay. 90 Rock becomes a pure rock station under the mold of KNAC out west. Greg Mull becomes our program director. I do not only not get fired. They lock me in afternoons. And for this amazing 7-year ride, I did afternoons on one of the most legendary rock stations in the history of rock radio. Still going strong. Seriously, think about that. You know, the backstage interviews, the parties, I kept my nose pretty clean. There were things I wouldn't do, things I'd see, you know, like blow ruin people's careers. So I never did it. I was not that going to be that guy. I was like, I pick and choose my poisons. Believe me, I do. So 7 years goes down the road. This guy named Bubba gets hired to do mornings. Heard of him. And they moved me over to Thunder, which is the sister station, the flagship classic rock station now. Remember, I'd started at KRL when it was classic, went to XTB. They were going to do their own thing with a guy named Max in afternoons, and they moved me over to middays at Thunder. Well, who am I following? The legendary Ron Diaz from Ron and Ron. Who's on the other guy who's doing afternoons? Scotty Phillips from YNF. I'm like, man, these are guys I wanted to work with when I kept sending tapes to Tampa. My life isn't so bad. Some changes accrued and automation came in and something called Profit, which is a computerized program to pre-record programming. When I had my first Saturday off, I was like, wow, this is cool. I don't have to work Saturdays in the morning. I'm floating in my pool listening to me pre-recorded on a computer playing back and attempting to make it sound as live as possible. This is called voice tracking. To the thousands of people listening to 98 Rock, and I'm floating in my pool going, eh, this is pretty cool. Little did I had no foresight. I didn't see that eventually overnights would be disappearing to a computer. We used to have 12 part-time jocks. What an amazing air staff we had. That was whittled down to 2, and everybody else had to pre-record their shows. Voice track this, voice track this, voice track this. And I'm not here to, you know, sucker punch terrestrial radio, but the reason I'm talking to you, the reason I'm affiliating myself and my gifts and my abilities with podcasting is because what I used to do on the radio is not allowed anymore. It's time for me to come back, bring it full circle. I'm just happen to be bringing it full circle where? Yeah, I set that son of a bitch up, didn't I? I'm bringing it full circle at radioinfluence.com. So I'm not done with the story. I do Thunder for 7 years. Thunder goes country. And nothing against people that like country. I'm sure Jerry P. Tuck, one of the, and we'll talk about the people I'm working with and what I'm doing and a lot of the shit. Believe me, I got 2 hours to fill your ears here, and I can. I got a lot to tell you tonight. You're going to get acquainted with me fairly quick. And Thunder Goes Country. And I sit down with the boss, and they didn't even try to keep me. Now, think about this. I'd done afternoons for this general manager for 7 years on one station, and basically middays and afternoons on another station for 7 years. 14 years of doing afternoon drive for two of the biggest sticks in the Bay Area. And not only doing it well, being consistent, knocking it, out of the park doing live remotes. I would say I'd put my radio production and voiceover and script reading up against anyone. And I realized that not only did a lot of people enjoy working with me, they would come to me and open up to me. In other words, I had really decent relationships with the people I worked with. So, you know, add it all up. Why didn't they try to keep me? Same general manager I'd worked for, the same guy that hired me in 1989. Why was I suddenly expendable? Oh, yeah. Let's backtrack 8 months. Let's face it, 9/11 takes place. I took it hook, line, and sinker like everybody else. I didn't know who Osama bin Laden was. I had remembered, of course, the Soviets had invaded Afghanistan in the 80s, and I do remember the boycott. I remember, you know, us thinking, oh, the Soviets are trying to, you know, expand on the globe, and they tried for 10 years, and then they finally stopped. But the guys that fought them were called the Mujahideen, and they were the Afghani freedom fighters, led by this guy named Osama bin Laden. Oh, by the way, financed by the CIA. So I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't know much. When Colin Powell sat in front of the entire country inside the United Nations and said, we need to go into Iraq, and he held up the little white vial, who knows, that was probably some like high-grade Peruvian. Oh, by the way, when I tell everybody this is actually anthrax, when we're done here, we're going to go and get fucked up. Think about it. I'm sitting there watching and going, yeah, I guess they're making anthrax in mobile labs. I guess we need to invade Iraq. You know, I didn't know there was no connection to 9/11. I was like, okay, that man with all those medals on his chest says we should go. I believe him. Why shouldn't I? Well, guess what? There's a reason we make Matrix references on Dangerous Conversation, rabbit hole references. Because once you start peeking into that rabbit hole, there's no going back. The red pill, the blue pill, call it what you will. By the way, I always play a movie for a little feng shui. Guess what's playing right now in my movies with the sound down? That's what I call it. Hang on, watch. Think I'm kidding? Watch. Hang on. Right now, the little bug's going in Neo's belly button. And now he's going to wake up. He's going to think it's a dream. Okay? Now, here's the question. What is the reality? What is the dream? What do you think about 9/11? What do you think about something else? So, 8 months before we change format, I've been reading a book. I read another book. I read a book from James Bamford. I make a reference to something called Operation Northwoods, which took place in the early 60s. Basically, the highest generals of all the military branches got together, came up with an idea to fake the idea that the Cubans were causing terrorism, big T word, in America, and that they set up a fake shoot down of an airplane so we would finally invade Cuba because the Bay of Pigs had failed. It's called Operation Northwoods. It went all the way to Lyman, Leominster. You got the five generals, and then the one above them is him. And you have the Secretary of Defense. Now, back then, McNamara was called the Secretary of War. This idea got to him and was sent to Kennedy. Kennedy said, no, thanks. I don't think we'll be faking anything here in America, so the Americans will get behind a war in Cuba. You have to remember, we almost went nuclear when the Soviets were caught via satellites putting nuclear weapons on Cuba. We had the big blockade. We came real close to idiocracy. And Kennedy says, no way. But meanwhile, Bamford puts this in a book, Operation Northwoods. What does it say? That the U.S. government is willing to fake its own attack from an outside source to justify attacking another source. And I read that book and I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And I'm moving on. Well, the internet's getting a little faster in 2004. And I stumble upon, I don't even know, you know, you like you click a link. And all of a sudden, there's this big brown building, big giant brown building in the middle of a city. And they got it kind of zoomed in on it. And it drops. The entire building disappears in 7 seconds. I'm like, ah, that's like a demolition. That's obviously what they look like. I've seen those many, many times. And then it says WTC-7 fell at 5:20 p.m. on 9/11/2001. So now I got to flash back to, yeah, I was on the air. Ron and Nick were doing mornings. 9/11 was taking place. Clear Channel decided no commercials, no music. Live air personalities, phone calls. This is a live event taking place in our world, and we don't want to worry about running commercials. This is a devastating attack on New York City. So the morning show had gone almost to noon. I was doing midday, so I came in. I kind of overlapped. Kathy Taylor came in with me. Scotty showed up early. And we were still on the air. Knowing absolutely almost no geopolitics. And 9/11 is taking place. Two towers have already fallen. And I'm looking up at CBS on the right-hand side on our little TV. And all of a sudden, I see a building go down. I was like, man. And the first thought that comes into my head is, well, those two towers fell. So they fell all over a bunch of everything else. And then it's kind of like dominoes. You know, this one's fallen now. And then now. And I'm not thinking clearly. I'm in shock. We all were. Now you fast forward 3 years and you see the same building fall and you go, man, that looks just like controlled demolition. That's exactly, they make a building fall straight down so it doesn't damage buildings around it. And it falls down almost at free fall because they blow out the supports underneath and then basically gravity takes over and then just boom, falls straight down. But it costs, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to do. It takes a long time to set this up. Meanwhile, this building I'm looking at looks like, man, that's literally looks like controlled demolition. I couldn't sleep that night. I'm not doing Chevy Checker. I couldn't sleep that night. My mind had started clicking. My mind had started saying, all right, listen. You're not the brightest bulb on the tree, but you're certainly not the dimmest. You need to start looking into what is the event in your lifetime. And I don't mean that in a good way, but it is the event. There's, you know, the generation before me or had Vietnam, the generation before that had Pearl Harbor. And we'll get into some of these tonight, by the way. Remember, I already mentioned Operation Northwoods. You're going to wonder why this show exists in one sentence, in two sentences. I'm tired of being bullshitted, and I prefer to think for myself. That's what I do. The only difference is I do it with my microphone on now. Instead of saying, hey, oh my God, Winger's in town. Oh yeah, by the way, guess who's Poison's opening up for the show? We're going to take you backstage, get some interviews. We're giving away tickets right now. This is Ledge 98 Rock. Bam. Okay, I could do that. I could do it with my eyes closed. It was what I was good at. And I was working at Thunder when 9/11 happened, classic rock. Well, in 2004, my little voice, it's kind of like if you've ever seen Animal House, you got the angel on one shoulder, you have the devil on the other. And the devil's going, come on, man, just keep playing the classic rock, keep your job. Don't piss anybody off. You've always flown below the radar. You've never been the controversial on-air guy. You do it tight and right, and people appreciate what you do. You've got consistent paycheck, and I'm laying in bed going, and the more I look into it, and the more I just see, okay, I'm not saying a plane didn't hit the Pentagon, but the damage, then I look at Shanksville, then I look at the air defense. Where were those jet fighters at? Then you start seeing who was on the 9/11 commission. Oh, by the way, who are the people that assembled the 9/11 commission? Who's the person that funneled the information to the 9/11 commission? In other words, if I'm going to believe my government, I want to know that this so-called inquiry was going to be legit. Well, while I was waiting for that 450 days after 9/11 to actually take place. By the way, that's my dog. She's exhausted from a camping trip. All she's doing is just going. She's making like little grizzly bear noises here at out on the Ledge Studios. Yeah, I'd seen a lot of people explain, and I'd seen the documentaries weren't out yet. They came out in 05 and 07 and 08 and right around there. And that's when the internet just blew up with people asking questions. And I've always been that person. What's wrong with asking a question? What's wrong with saying, I don't believe this story? What's wrong? Yeah, that's what happens when you're raised in an extreme religion like I was. You realize it. People tell you it's this, this, and this. And then later on, as George Carlin likes to say, when I reach the age of reason and you get to that point, and you start to ask your own questions. That's why I've got a frontal lobe. That's why I have a brain. I'm not here to sit here and repeat your thoughts. Some of them might make perfect sense. Some of them might be solid science. And some of them might be bullshit. Now, you take the biggest day in the history of this country in my lifetime, and there are starting to be holes developing in this story. What's the first thing you do? Well, I'm a choice and consequence guy. Action, reaction. Simple physics. By the way, Building 7, simple physics. And I'm like, okay, let's see what our country does now. Let's see who they blame things on. Let's see what their description of what's going on is going on. And by the way, let's make sure we find out who's making the money. Hashtag Halliburton. Halliburton gets a Ric Flair. We should give him 36 for the $36 billion they made. $36 billion. Think Dick Cheney wanted to get into the Middle East? The Vice President of the United States of America? You can only have so many holes in a wall before it becomes a sieve. And the more you have, and the more rabbit holes you chase, and the more you find out, oh, geez, how the heck did that happen? Wait a minute. Okay. Let me get this straight. 9/11's taking place. There are four, what we're told, hijackings of large aircraft. And they went to their destination. Some made it, they say. Some made it, they didn't. Do you realize that America's air defense system, you know, Tom Cruise, Iceman, those guys, were actually already up in the air that morning, flying around? Do you realize that? Oh, it gets better. It gets better. Never leave your wingman. They weren't only just up in the air in the Northeast Corridor of our country. They were running military drills. Do you know what a military drill is? It's when you kind of fake it. You might have two people or two groups from the same army. You know, one's blue, one's red. You know, you're not using lethal weapons or anything, and you run military drills. You keep sharp. You prepare for outcomes before they even take place.
That's what a military drill is. Well, guess what they were practicing the morning of 9/11? They were practicing hijackings of major airlines being directed at major U.S. interests or buildings. They were practicing hijackings. So when you look at your F-16 and you're looking down at that big green scope and you see about 10 dots out there, those are all imaged. They're sent by a computer to that plane, and those are your fake bad guys. And you're chasing the fake bad guys. You're running a military drill. Well, guess what? How is it these poor pilots couldn't figure out that four of those hijackings were real? Because they were in the middle of a drill. Now, what do you think the odds are of running a drill, a hijacking drill, in the same airspace at the same time as an actual hijackings are taking place, and the pilots that could have broken off and easily had tracked down these slow-moving airplanes, not one single jet fighter got near for an hour and a half. Not one single jet fighter gets near. This is a trillion-dollar defense industry. How to 757s shouldn't be able to outmaneuver an F-18 or an F-16. Or what, or even A-10s. Something was wrong that day. When you start looking, you're either worried about what your friends are going to think about you if you speak out. And believe me, this community known as the 9/11 Truth Community is both hardcore and taking care of each other and absolutely, absolutely empathetic and realizing how bad our friends, relatives, especially relatives, will beat us up for questioning that day. That's 2015. But I was questioning it on the air, on Thunder, in October of 2004. And the intro you heard to tonight's show is actually what I played. It didn't sit well with Clear Channel's management. In fact, the two guys that I worked for, Dan DiLoretto and Brad Harden, still love those guys. I don't think they had it in for me, but I made them nervous by what I was asking out loud. And when they switched the country, not a finger was raised to try to keep me in the building. I realized at that moment that what I had said and the opinions I had, and my opinions were only questions like, and believe me, there's 260 open questions about that day now, something like that. And lots of different organizations asking, going at it from architects and engineers, going at it from the actual footage of, dozens of people, dozens and dozens and dozens of people down there as this thing happens, describing explosions, plural. And all the different descriptions, and you start looking at all the film footage, and you start looking at, and then you start looking at the politics leading up to how these warnings were ignored, and then the actual event, and then to finish what I was saying earlier, problem, reaction, solution. It's called the Hegelian dialect. And what it does, and we're going to get to what is false flag here in a second, because there's more than one definition, but when large governments or oligarchies need public approval, they need to do anything outside of their own borders, usually invade, usually take the resources. They need an enemy. They need a bad guy. They need a boogeyman. And I'm not saying atrocities associated with some of those people acting in various aspects weren't brutal, but we're not talking about, we're not talking tiddlywinks here. We're talking geopolitical war for resources. Now, do they just stand in front of us in 2000 and go, you know what? The Middle East has a lot of oil. We need to get over there and set up some military bases in every country, and run pipelines from here to here to here and here. And we're going to need to, you know, and by the way, if they don't like it, it's, we're going to invade them. What do you think we're going to say? Of course not. We don't want to be the bad guys. We don't want to invade countries and conquer them. We're not Darth Vader. We're fucking Luke Skywalker. Right? Right? And everybody has their idea of America's this and God is that. So we're starting to get to the crux of what this show has always been about. Be a ledgehead. It means two things. One, you think for yourself. Two, you keep an open mind. Because thinking for yourself, we all do that. We all do that. I'm right. She's wrong. She'll come back to me. That's him thinking. And she's like, oh, he treats me like shit, and I'm never going back. Those are people thinking for themselves. What I'm talking about, what a ledgehead is if someone comes up to you and tells you, well, God is this, or your government is that, or this soda's, you know, this could be cancer-free, or, oh, here's more good news on genetically modified organisms, or, oh, by the way, don't worry about autism. There's absolutely no connection whatsoever to your child being 6 weeks old and stuck 26 times with needles. And, yes, there's a little bit of mercury in there, but don't worry about that because the fancy people in the white coats say it's fucking cool. Sooner or later, you will think for yourself. The other part of that is keep an open mind. Because I've changed my mind about, not completely on a subject, but on a, let's say 9/11. There's a lot of branches, a lot of stories. I'm rethinking the Pentagon because I saw some amazing research on it. And maybe it was a large airplane. I don't know. But some of the stuff I saw was the most recent stuff. It was one of the best researchers in that movement, a man who's meticulous about coming to his, you know, and I watched that last week, and I was like, you know what? That could have been a large airplane, the way it's looked at now, and you know, you see so many more photos and all these things. So there's that one. And then we had Operation Northwoods, which is 1963. Well, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I was kind of like Fred. Was it no? What's his name? Fred Savage. The Wonder Years. That was me. 60s, riding my 3-speed bike, crush on the girl a couple houses over. This thing called Vietnam was going on. I don't know what it meant. I know it was a war, and I know that I think once in a blue moon from our very small town we'd hear about someone dying. But I knew I was an 8-year old and my baseball cards and wiffle ball bats, and this war was nothing that I could fathom in my mind. Other than my brother Roy joined the Navy so he wouldn't get drafted. So he would disappear for long periods of time and come back in his Navy outfit. And that's about all I knew. Well, I didn't realize that the Vietnam War was started by something called the Gulf of Tonkin. T-O-N-K-O-N. Or K-I-N. Incident. Okay, that's like Vietnam is sitting there, then there's a bunch of water. Okay. Now from where their land is to 20 miles out is their official waters. Okay, you know, we've heard, you know, international waters, and then whatever it is their water. So what do? We send a bunch of Navy destroyers into their water. Just, you know, basically kind of like peeing the big guy on the beach, kicking sand in their face. And they don't do anything. You know, they drive their little tiny boats by us and maybe fire like a rifle shot in the air or something, or nothing, essentially nothing. Well, the Gulf of Tonkin incident happens. Apparently, Vietnamese PT boats sped by and launched torpedoes towards a U.S. Navy destroyer in international waters. This was, of course, relayed to us by McNamara, Secretary of War, remember? Secretary of Defense now is the same title. Well, let's fast forward 30 years. He's sitting around in an interview and he goes, yeah, that Vietnam thing, that was a mistake. publicly admits it on video on it that the incident never happened. We were wrong about that. Meanwhile, Johnson, the event happens one day. Johnson's already speaking to Congress the very next day. Not even saying, let's take them, you know, let's take some time to look into this. You know, let's not be knee jerk. We're talking a declaration of war here. Boom. Front page, Vietnamese attack, U.S. Destroyer. Johnson declares, boom, we're in Vietnam. Oops. That actually never happened. You starting to sense anything here? This thing called false flag. False flag is either one of three things. A real incident by real perpetrators where someone else takes credit or someone else runs with it. An event that actually took place, people died, things like that. But the people that are being blamed for it didn't do it at all. And Christ, we just had another shooting today. We had one, 3 days ago. We had France. Or a completely faked event where no one died and there were what they call crisis actors. I'm not a big fan of those theories. Very hard to prove. But if you're going to keep an open mind, you have to keep it. If you say false flag can mean more than one thing. The Gulf of Tonkin was a false flag. Our government lied to you and said the Vietnamese attacked us, which they didn't. Nobody died. But it was a reason that they got through Congress and the American people to go stop the spread of communism. Over 1 million Vietnamese, over 1 million Laotians, about 1 million Cambodians, well over 50,000 Americans, all died for a lie. Now, who needs to lie you into war? Go back to 1959 or 58. Eisenhower's leaving office and he goes, beware the military-industrial complex. They made a boatload of cash in World War II. And they're pissed there's no war. They make weapons. They make planes. They make guns and rifles and bombs and dynamite and gunpowder and napalm. There's a real humanistic way, huh? And they want war because their profits go tenfold. Tenfold. Make $1 million. A war comes along, you can make $10 million. That's why they call it war profiteers. You know, there's no such thing as a peace profiteer. Find me one. But they just can't say, well, we want to sell a lot of weapons, and we want their oil, and we want to put military bases out there. Oh, wait a minute. They did say it. They only didn't just say it. They wrote it down. Did you ever hear of a manifesto where they all get together and they're all so full of their own shit that they have the hubris to write down a plan about how to take over the Middle East, how to make sure that much more money is spent on the military, and how those profiteers can get in there to build those roads? Well, bomb the road, you make money selling the bomb. Build a road, you make money on the bulldozer. You make money both ways. You blow shit up, you fix it. There's no profit in peace. There's a ton in war. But they need you to fear a boogeyman. So in the 60s in Vietnam, it was, that's right, the communists. So then what happens? Let's fast forward to the late 80s. Down comes the Berlin Wall. Reagan's hanging out with Gorbachev, and they're shaking hands and high-fiving. And oh, my God, communism, the Big Red Scare, is over. There's going to be peace on our planet. This is awesome. The Scorpions do a tune. There's a video. Down to Corky Park. Oh, my God. Sorry, guys. was feeling cocky. I had to give it a shot. Well, all comes Bush number one and goes, well, that's Saddam Hussein. And next thing you know, boom, we're dropping more bombs. So much for peace. That didn't last very long. We go in there, and then we don't go in there. And Schwarzkopf goes, we should go in there. And Bush says, no, we're going to leave. And I'm thinking, wow, you invade a country, and then you change your mind. And then you just kind of go, never mind. Well, little did I know, here we go again, that our intelligence sources gave us photos of a whole bunch of tanks amassed near the Kuwaiti border. Tons of them. Little did I know that those were fake. George Bush wanted us to get in there, but America was like, let me see. He's invaded Kuwait. We don't care. That was America. So how did they change what we thought about that war? What did they do? This is a different kind of false flag. Now picture what we got here. 14-year-old testifying in front of Congress. She worked in the Kuwaiti hospital as a volunteer and a nurse. In come the evil Iraqi Saddam Hussein-driven soldiers. They kick babies, pull babies out of incubators. These are mostly preemies. And in other words, babies in an incubator. It's not sitting around healthy. Here's the story she tells. They take them all out and leave them to die on the cold floor. And they take the incubator machines. Because I know when I invade a country, the first thing I'm going for is the incubators. I'm not going for the oil. I'm not going. Nope. Incubators. She breaks down and cries in front of Congress. This story gets repeated on the news in the loop. Next thing you know, Bush Sr. saying, and they're throwing babies out of incubators. Suddenly, 80% of America is going, yeah, let's go to war. Guess what? Here we go again. The girl testifying, not her gig. Guess who? She's actually the daughter of a Kuwaiti prince or king. And they sent her to New York to study at an ad agency where she was trained to give her speech about incubator babies. None of that ever happened. That's a different kind of false flag. Technically, they describe the death of infants. Never happened. We invaded about 2 or 3 months later. Now let's move forward to 1995. I'm doing afternoons at 98 Rock. I think back then we still... check the old teletype, the printer. It was a dot matrix printer at that time. But when I first started in radio, it literally was a typewriter. You just sit there and like, wow, it's, you know, it's being sent via Morse code or whatever. But and then, of course, dot matrix printer. I remember the day when I ripped the copy off. Kurt Cobain had killed himself. I remember the day I ripped it off when Magic Johnson announced he had AIDS. Read that on the air. I remember the day I ripped it off and said, there's been a bombing in Oklahoma City. And this was right about the very beginning of what we call the digital editor. Before, we used to have to record stuff on actual recording tape and mark it with a grease pencil and slice it. It just got brutally. It was Stone Age. And then multi-track recorders made it easier to overlay tracks. And then you had digital recording. And once you had digital recording, you could move sound up and down and slide it around, and you could create these little production directors would take a song that was popular at the time, and I think it was Lightning Crashes by Live, and they took some of the, oh, they're still removing bodies, and they made those montages, made those mashups. Those are some of the first mashups. And our production director made one with Lightning Crashes because we were playing the crap out of that band. And here it was, you know, people talking about them removing, you know, the infants and the young kids from the daycare center, and that over 160 people were already dead. And here I am not knowing anything again. This is the mid-90s. I'm more worried about my perm. It's part of my life. It's who I was supposed to be then, and now I'm getting to be who I am supposed to be now. It's the best part of this. But I remember playing that song a couple times, and I heard the name Timothy McVeigh. I heard a Ryder truck referenced. I heard fertilizer bomb. It's about all I knew. I didn't realize what Clinton had done less than a year after, and I'll tell that in a second. But basically, you know, other than the dead people and memorializing these people, that's all that mattered to me. The geopolitics, I didn't know. I didn't know why one man living in America didn't like America versus someone else living in Afghanistan that didn't like Russia versus, you know, I just didn't know. So what turns out is I'm just moving on in my life. Well, now I get a chance to look back because a noble lie. Noble, K-N-O-B-L-E, lie, L-I-E. Google it. Watch it. It is a documentary about Oklahoma City. And the first time I watched it, I basically shook my head and I said, not again. Tell me that at least one of these events is actually real. I mean, completely real. And that there is no governmental influence, operation, after the fact, you know. A lot of people talk about these shootings and the Second Amendment and things like that. I get how politicians are always trying to attach what they want to get done to events, but I'm really tired of hearing about these events coming directly from them. And then I got a chance to watch A Noble Lie. And A Noble Lie, basically, you know, if you know the story, Timothy McVeigh made a big fertilizer bomb, ammonium nitrate, and a bunch of cow shit. Put it in the back of a Ryder truck, pulled it up there, set a timer, left, walked away, boom. Half the building comes down, over 160 people are dead. Well, what was in the building? Oh, FBI. Okay. Terrorism Act. Yep. ATF. Wow. I guess if you're hitting a government building, you're certainly anti-government. Of course, a daycare center. Half the building comes down. Well, then, picture your event. I don't know where you're listening tonight, but whatever your city is, picture that event taking place live. Let's say at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a good-sized building somewhere that you would call the downtown or a city. Picture it happening live. Okay, you have people running away. You have people curious and lingering. You have, who knows how many first responders going, everybody from, you know, triage and ambulance and fire department and all those people. You picture everyone running towards it. You know, and that's what we like about first responders. They don't think about themselves. They think about you and me. I could be trapped in that building, or you could be sitting in a fire and not be able to get to your pets or something, whatever. This is what we like about that. Well, who else is on these scenes now? And who else has been on the scene of these events as they happen live? That's a quality beverage right there. The media. Channel 4, Channel 7, Channel 10, Channel 22, Channel 38. The media was there. And they all had their trucks set up. And they could see, you know, there was a certain amount being cordoned off. But they could see if there was a cop car that could go under the yellow tape or an ambulance coming out. Or, this is what pissed me off. Remember the original story. Timothy McVeigh makes a bomb by himself, parks it in the front. It blows up. Half the building falls down. Timothy McVeigh acts by himself. The only bomb is the one he made. That is the official story. Today, it's still the official story. So what happened? What did four different TV stations pick up on their live remote broadcast trucks. What do you think went in under that yellow tape? Cop car? Ambulance? Certainly not a politician. Fireman? How about a bomb disposal unit? How about not one, but two separate bomb disposal units? White truck, big heavy-induced reconstructed trailer on the back. It almost looks like a big round chunk of steel, because that's basically what it is. It's about a foot thick. You put the bomb inside it. You shut it. If that thing goes off, that bomb, that massive steel ball takes the blast. Or it's a long one that looks more like a natural gas storage type of thing. But these are incredibly thick. They're bomb disposal units. Now, wait a minute. Why would two separate bomb disposal units show up when Timothy McVeigh made the only bomb? Oh, they found two others unexploded inside the building that are, quote, high tech and, quote, more powerful than the ammonia bomb. And they didn't explode, and they found them, and the police said, come and get them, and the bomb disposal unit showed up and then took them away. Guess what America never heard about once or ever, because it was only seen on live local media in Oklahoma City. This is why so many times when events happen now, many people say, hit your DVR, record stuff. I'm not saying everything that takes place is fake. I am saying that powerful people get what they want by moving the way the masses think. And most of us are so caught up in our lives and busy and struggling with debt or jobs or relationships or health issues or all of the above that to take the time to go down that rabbit hole will kick your ass. It will kick your ass. But lucky me, I'm born with the gift of gab and that curiosity, and having been raised in a strict religion and started really looking into things like quantum mechanics and metaphysics, and maybe the idea that something called spirituality and something called a physical world or universe could actually be the same thing taking place, simply looked at from two different perspectives. Let's face it, I'm a curious dude, and I have been for a while now. And the reason I am is every time I turn around and something on my TV or radio or newspaper or the front page of a magazine, and we'll get to the five companies that own that crap now, all of it, I come to realize that the only thoughts I have are what I've been told or what I heard or what I saw. Scott, I'm just sitting there. Have you come to your own conclusion about anything ever? On your own? Yeah, once. I started realizing, and we'll get to, I do different shows. Some are heavy, some are light, some are completely sophomoric. There's an 8-year-old living in my head. He's got the night off, I'll tell you that. But believe me, I am a highly motivated broadcaster, and we'll get to the second half of my career, as I like to put it. But I just couldn't be the guy to ignore things. Now, I did become a little pushy. 2004, 2005, I really felt like I was on an island. No one wanted to even look into these, just a few of them, never mind all of them, or even 9/11, which is a very emotional thing for people. But the moment someone says conspiracy theorist back to me, I go, oh, so you don't want to talk. That's okay. You know, you say two words, you walk away. If you are ever curious, if you are ever want to really start to realize the power structures of this planet, how they work, who pulls the strings, who stands up, who sits down, and what you know as your truth might possibly be complete bullshit. You don't want to know? Cool. You're listening to the wrong show right now. Okay, you're exactly about 59 minutes into this podcast. Shut it off. Go away. Don't waste my time and don't waste your time. Because 500 years ago, the earth was flat. And the sun revolved around the earth. And by the way, flat earthers, how bored are you guys? There's a big difference between keeping an open mind and saying, you know, I don't know everything, and I'm willing to admit that, and being someone who goes, I know exactly what's going on, I'm right, you're wrong. And that's the ebb and flow of the internet. That's why I love Twitter. That's why I love Facebook. You get some really cool, open-hearted, too, is a big part of what I'm about. You get a lot of those people on the internet kind of putting themselves out there. That's good, by the way. And thanks for being that person. It's not always easy. You know, maybe it is. You just type a couple words, you're in, you're out. So I kind of got pushed aside. At the same time I get pushed aside, this guy named Jeff Ryan calls me up and says, how would you like to be the pregame host for the Buccaneer Radio Network? Before and after the games. I'm like, oh boy. I'm like, yes, yes, absolutely yes. And then as soon as I hung up the phone, I was like, holy shit. I've never done talk radio. I know quite a bit about football, but you know what? Holy crap. The whole summer I freaked. A guy named Jack Harris helped me out a lot first couple of shows. But the guy on the other side of the glass, who's actually not only a co-owner or owner, part owner of RadioInfluence.com. He's a great radio guy. His name is Jerry Petuck. And right now he's listening to my voice and he's probably touching himself. I spent 7 years doing Buccaneer Radio with Jerry and it was a blast. It really helped me cut my chops. But it also taught me about prep. Looking into things, and my interview skills got better and better as I went along. And basically, having hosted a show with a guy named Rondé Barber, who will be in the Hall of Fame for 6 years, I got to ask him a question and watch him answer me 90 seconds later. I sat there and went, oh, I guess I have to ask another question. That's how good an interview that guy was. Yeah, tell me about the game. And I would just lean back in the chair. I wouldn't even sit up on the mic until I knew he was just about done. So in other words, some of my first long-form interviews were actually with people that really were excellent interviews going in. It wasn't, you know, later on we developed a great chemistry. And, of course, Jerry was the other guy producing it on the other side of the glass. I call Jerry the octopus because, like, with one hand he'll be editing audio and the other hand he'll, like, he'll have the phone in the crook of his ear and he'll be booking a guest for a different show. And then he's, like, moving a mouse around and he's editing audio. I call him the octopus. Because he loves the biz. So doing those long-form interviews. The other side of that coin was, you know, sitting in for Steve one day doing the Shelton Quarles video talk show. Shelton's a pretty good middle linebacker in the NFL, good cover two guy, maybe a little unappreciated, not a Hall of Famer, but the guy was good. But Steve used to have him every Wednesday, I think it was. Well, Steve was sick or couldn't make it in, so I had to do it. And I had to have Shelton Quarles answer my questions. Well, I had heard Shelton before, and I knew you don't go in with three questions like you do with Rondé. You go in with 25, because Shelton would give you the nine-second answer. I'd say, Shelton, so tell us how the defense played. Well, I think we played pretty good. You know, we missed a couple of turnovers there. We probably could have had a couple more sacks, but all in all, we played good. You know, I'm used to Rondé giving me 2.5 minutes of like War and Peace. And all of a sudden, you know what I realized was prep. Be curious about things. Write 10. If you're going to interview someone, don't write 5 questions down. Write 15 and highlight the top 5 and go from there. You might never get to number 6. Prep, but have it. So. And a lot of the stuff I did was pre-produced, which I would have to pre-produce in a studio then record, and then send to Jerry. So there was, I learned a lot about talk radio, but it was just Buccaneer football. It was just the Bucs. And that taught me that, you know, just even doing sports talk, which I would sit in for, now you got to know what's going on with the Rays. Now you know what's got to know what's going on with the Bolts. You had better know what's going on with the Gators and the Noles and the Canes. You know, all of a sudden, wow, I'm going to have to be watching a lot of ESPN and sports if I'm going to do sports talk. I like my life too much to watch that much television. So even though I dabbled in sports talk, it wasn't for me. Though it's great to be part of Radio Influence. Oh, I was just gonna set that up better, and I didn't. You know, because I'm gonna go down the list of shows here, of course, at this great new network that I'm associated with. But I will say this: doing sports talk radio is work. You have to know what's going on in at least three of the four major sports. You have to have an opinion. You have to know what happened in last night's games, which means it's all or nothing in sports talk. And I worked for Jerry a little bit over at a sports station that's now defunct. And he would give me hours that I would eat up because I needed the paycheck. And what did I do? I kept practicing my art. I kept doing talk radio. But realizing that I would actually have to make a commitment. If I really wanted a gig in sports talk radio in this town, I'd have to up my game. There were guys that knew every sport. They knew the starting quarterbacks. They knew who was on IR. I didn't. So I was like, no, cross it off the list. I'm done. I got a gig at Radio IO, which is owned by Bubba the Love Sponge. And I was offered a nighttime talk show host, and the only rule was don't get sued. It was my first foray into the internet broadcasting. Now, you're talking to a guy who's been doing terrestrial since 1980. So when I got to the idea, I could actually, I can say fuck? Yeah, you can say fuck. Really? Yeah, give it a try. No, man. Are you sure? I can see. Fuck. Oh, come on, man. Say it like you mean it. Fuck. I am fuck of the mountain. You remember that? George Carlin's bit? It's just a word. It's an utterance. It's a guttural utterance between your vocal cords, your mouth, your lips, and your tongue. It is one of the most primitive forms of communication on the planet. Or not primitive on the planet, but primitive when it comes to high-tech communication. And we're still upset about someone saying shit. So I really enjoyed my gig at Radio Isle. Not because I could say fuck when I wanted to. It was when it was meant to be there. As a real word with punch behind it. Versus just saying it because you can. Now, if you listen to podcasts now, and there's a lot of them, a lot of guys are just having a few beers, sitting behind their mics, and swearing like their mom's out of town. Now, I'm not a prude. But I also believe that there's, I don't know, how many words in the English dictionary? Wouldn't be such a bad idea to learn more than five plus fuck. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think? That was supposed to be. See, it's my first day of school. I got my first day of school jitters. Yeah, this one's for me now. Here we go. It's supposed to be a fail buzzer, it says. Fail buzzer. By the way, these are called button bars in radio. They used to be called 360. One of the first people to ever use a button bar. Ever use a button bar or a 360 system was the Fabulous Sports Babe. When Nancy was working for ESPN Radio, very few people were syndicated at the time. I don't have those stats, and I'm not that big of a radio guru to sit there and go, oh, so-and-so set this record. But I do remember hearing the Fabulous Sports Babe, way back then with Hoo-Ha! And it was just like, I don't know if it was her favorite. I don't know if it was that your finger was stuck on the button. But I do remember the sound of a syndicated program with some, what we call bells and whistles. Why do you think they call them bells and whistles? But, you know, wait a minute. Oh, I can't be left alone. I can't be left alone here. Seriously. I'm supposed to say bells and whistles. Get it? There we go. No. No. There it is. All right, so here's bells and whistles. Those are radio button bars. And they got overused. And sometimes the key is do what I call do the Letterman. Beat it into the ground until you don't want to ever hear that sound again. And just when they think it's done. Remember, this is theater of the mind. This is this Fabulous Sports Babe. This is like, you know, I'm used to tracking albums, man. You're listening to Michael Scott. I had many air names. And, yeah, we're cruising through Foghat Live tonight. Your album tracks at midnight. Rock 102 WAQI, Springfield, Mass. I'm going to go now. And she's like, you know, hoo-ha, the bells are going, and hey, babe, and people are calling up. And I'm like, man, listen to the energy of this show. Well, guess who's part of this great network? Of course, Fabulous Sports Bet. Now she knows a ton of famous people, so I got to use it for hookups. That'll be my gig. Wrestling Soup, the MMA Insiders. Then they've got their MMA reports. Then they've got Cage Crash, the Fabulous Sports Babe, already mentioned. Independent Roundtable, the Roddy and Linnelli Show. On the Beach, I know those knuckleheads. The Scrum Sports Show, know some of those knuckleheads. Off the Air, Three Dog Thursday, The Sports Den, Fight Time, Big Fight Weekend. And what was it, The Thin Blue Line just debuted? Yeah. Rich Herrera, too. I want to make sure I mention Rich. I'm going down some of the shows right now. I'm just cruising the website. Yeah, Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. That's the other one I want to mention. So what is this? Some of these people are like me. Maybe they were forced out for contract reasons. Maybe they were forced out because they had, you know, not kissed the right ass at the right time. And maybe they made a career move to one station, left another, and that new station decided to change its mind. By the way, that's called blowing up a format. It happens all the time. Well, some of these people got their heads together. Jerry Petuck, of course, and Jason. Both of these guys decided, you know what? I bet there's enough frustrated, talented, motivated radio people out there. Let's build a network. Now, when I think of a network, I think of an NBC. Comedy followed by a drama, followed by an action adventure. Call it, you know, a network isn't, you know, 12 of the same shows. You don't want that. You want this show and the Thin Blue Line opposite some good light sports talk or some MMA or some wrestling chatter. You want a network. And that's why I'm proud to be part of, at least I'm ready, RadioInfluence.com. There's a couple things I would mention in my older shows that I did, and one of them was called 80-20. And people reference it all the time when they send me an email. And 80-20 just basically means if mankind is ever going to find some common ground, we're going to realize that 80% of our life experience from our birth to our death is exactly the same. And people, when I say that, they go, no, it isn't. They don't think of it that way. I'm like, okay, I know there was a first tooth for you. I know there was a first step for you. I know there was a first word for you. You need me to keep going? Because I can keep going all the way to your death. Your first big loss, your first crush, your first serious injury, your first sickness. You want me to keep going? And that is also the second and the third. And I would remind people that the human experience though you have different faces and names in front of you that I do, and though you have different circumstances, maybe it's a little higher up the food chain financially, maybe it's a little lower down the food chain intellectually, you still have the same experiences. The 20 of the 80-20 is what you constantly are fed in mainstream media. You are constantly fed this religion, that religion, that religion over there. Here's a different religion. No, it's sort of like that religion. Okay, that's just religion. Now let's get to, oh, this government says this. Do we know this for sure? This government just said this. You are constantly fed, oh, hey, do you think there's been any racial conversation in social media in the last 3 years? Do you think it's by accident? It's called divide and conquer. Sit there and tell them they're different because they have a different skin color. They're different because they have a different socioeconomic background. They're different because they have a different sexual orientation. They're different. They're different. They're different. They're not. Those are the outer layers of your existence, which is, by the way, called diversity. It's a good thing. So even the 20 is supposed to be the 20. We're not supposed to all be the same, think the same, act the same, dress the same, walk the... Holy shit. Just give me a gun. I do that exploding head and scanners. Boom! I'd rather be dead than live in a world of conformity. But what they do in the mainstream media, and there are five companies that own... You name it. I don't care if you're talking any major radio group, any major television, any satellite provider, any magazine... Any major websites, they're all owned by the same five corporations. So your thoughts come from five companies. Think they might actually... Can you hear my dog panting? Yeah, probably. She actually came alive. You want to go outside? Hang on. Show interruption. Come on, baby. You're more sore than I am. Go lay down. We went to the park the last couple of days, and she's acting like a senior citizen. People are like, Led, you going to take a break? I'm like, why should I? I got too much to talk about. I'll play like one tune, and we'll get into what we play and why we play it when we play music on this show. By the way, show will only be 2 hours every week. I don't want to say only, but only 2 hours, because I do some three-hour shows from time to time elsewhere. But I hope to really get to know everybody that does shows here, even have them on to plug their own programs. I'm all about cross-pollination because I was raised in a radio environment where the morning guy hung out with the night guy, and the night guy, used to go over to, in the middle of a Saturday afternoon, the afternoon guy would come over to your house and get high with you. Or they'd show up at your gig that night. There was support. It was family. And this is why people like Jason Floyd and Jerry P. Tuck wanted to build this, because they missed that. And people like me miss that too. So I hope to be a big part of what they're doing here. And, someday I hope to read that lineup and it's 40 shows. That's how you build a network. One solid one at a time. I'm pro-cannabis. That's a two-hour conversation, but just so you know, I've said this out loud. I'll say it again here in a minute. But basically, at first I learned the history of cannabis. That's why I call it cannabis. Cannabis, 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 cannabis is because it's cannabis. It's not marijuana. That's a slang term. It's not pot. It's not weed. It's all of those wonderful names. But it's a plant. Just like a dandelion is a dandelion, cannabis is cannabis. Why is it illegal? Has it always been illegal? What is the history of cannabis on planet Earth? Scott, could you please tell us? I feel you're overusing the bell tonight. Oh, yeah? Fuck you. That's some comic relief. Cannabis has been around, a history of it, written history, and is about 12,000 years. Most civilizations. Started in the Far East. Seeds were easily transportable. It moved its way westward through Asia, through India, obviously through the Middle East, all the way to Europe, and then eventually found its way here in North America and South America. Now it grows everywhere. It grows in sand. It grows in dirt. It grows in mud. It grows in swamps. It grows at high altitudes. It'll grow in a sidewalk crack. Should I get a bill? No. All right, what's the history of it? Why did it become illegal? Well, about 100 years ago, its sister plant, hemp, or cannabis, hemp can't get you high, doesn't have THC. Cannabis gets you high, has THC. Hemp was being used everywhere, all over the planet, for ropes, for fiber. The seeds are high in proteins and omega oils, high in protein. So it would give you proteins, fibers, oils, building material. And oh yeah, it grew from seed to harvest in 16 weeks. Unlike a tree, it took 40 years. William Randolph Hearst owned a lot of forest. He was, what, selling 32 newspapers at the time? Think of all that newspaper print, chopping down forests, selling a bunch of white paper with letters on it to people all across the country in the early 1900s. And along comes this machine called the decorticator. Because up to that point, it was tough getting those hemp fibers out. Now, just like a big old tractor will harvest corn, this decorticator would take hemp and turn it into, this is on the cover of Popular Mechanics magazine back then. They called hemp the billion-dollar crop. And the oil would replace petrochemical oil. And the fibers would replace cotton. See where we're going with this? You think powerful people would get together and, I don't know, conspire? 100 years ago, cannabis and hemp became illegal in America because it threatened too many industries. Took me a while to even realize there was a difference between pot and hemp. Didn't know much about it. Learned a lot on the internet. Start watching little 15-minute documentaries. You go, oh, here we go. Follow the money. It's always follow the money. Follow the money. Well, here's the good news. As we all know, Colorado, Washington State, Washington, D.C., Oregon, I think we're up to 25 or 26 with medical marijuana. Here in the state of Florida, it'll hopefully be back on the ballot because it works for people. Drunk driving is down. Overdoses, fatal overdoses on opiates are down. This is in states with medical marijuana. Alcohol sales has dropped 5% in most of those states. Accidental overdoses of opiates, down. You know why? The internet. Because you watched a documentary, or I watched a documentary, and somebody didn't make up my mind for me about cannabis. I didn't have to buy into all the crap I'd heard growing up. Oh, it's going to make you psycho. And, you know, of course, by the time I got to high school, I decided for myself, I made up my own mind about that stuff. And I'd used it periodically on the air as a rock jock. But mostly as at a concert, at a party, that kind of stuff. I didn't realize I could actually use it on the air successfully until I started doing talk radio. Now, I had to keep it a secret because I didn't want to risk the job of the man who hired me or the people who worked with me. But here's a revelation. If it makes you all fucked up and it makes you, non-creative or basically sitting there with nothing to say, freaked out, too antisocial, the way they paint this drug. Do you realize that most of the 60s music that's really good was written while people were high? It doesn't make you creative. It kicks open the door to doubt. That's what John Lennon said, paraphrasing. It didn't make me creative. It just allowed it to flow. I wrote down musical notes. I didn't question everything. Oh, that's going to suck, blah, blah, blah. But once I got high, the thoughts flowed. The musical notes flowed. The creativity took place. So now we know about cannabis in the last, let's go 5 years. Sanjay Gupta is now flipped. We now know that both Israel and Britain have been studying the medical effects of THC and cannabidiol, the CBD, which you hear a lot about lately, for 20 years. We know that in the late 1970s, I know this is disappointing to hear, the United States patented THC as a cancer killer in the late 1970s. Look it up. Do you think if you could grow some of your own medicines in your backyard or, hell, in your own closet, wouldn't you? If it was your, I don't know, it made you more social. It allowed you to create better paintings. It allowed you to sing better in the nightclub at night. It kicked the door open to your creativity, and you could grow it in your own backyard. And yes, its sister plant is off the charts with what it can provide. Of course, that's going to ruffle the feathers of big money. Of course it's going to. So here we are again being lied to about what it could do, what it can't. By the way, Dr. Cristina Sanchez in Spain, Dr. Robert Melamede over in Colorado. A lot of doctors are taking the freedom now and taking that THC to the Petri dish, and amazing things are happening with cancer cells, and I mean that in the bad way for cancer. It's cutting off the blood supply. It's telling it not to reproduce. It's telling it to mutate as it reproduces. And I believe the last one is there's four different ways to program whatever you give a cancer cell to create its own destruction. Guess what? THC works all four ways. We're going to have clinical trials pretty soon. There's a website called Reset, R-E-S-E-T.me. Reset.me. Okay, her name is Amber Lyons. She used to work for CNN. She covered both sides of a war in Bahrain. Her report never ran. She started to realize that the corporations were controlling the message. She got out of big media, and now she runs Reset.me. And they're collecting stories on MDMA, psilocybin, mushrooms, LSD, cannabis. Hundreds and hundreds of people telling their story. It worked for me this way. It didn't work this way. I liked it because of this. There's actual numbers of research. So we can get around the lies and the propaganda. What do you think the last, I don't know, almost 90 minutes have been about? A show like mine exists so we can look and go, wait a minute. What's that? How come I've never heard of that? How come I've heard of those six things and I've never heard of number seven? Oh, because number seven would be part of the demise of one through six. That's how it works. That's how they do it. That's another example. That's why I'm pro-cannabis. I know the mainstream media is full of shit. I worked for it. For a while, anyway. I'm a big fan of solar energy, of course. Other than geothermal and tidal energy and wind, well, actually, solar creates wind. It's pretty much the future of mankind, okay? So anyone who says it's a failure, look at who funds that sentence. Find a guy named Mark Morano, look him up, and realize that Big Oil pays him to argue against solar energy. Gee, that's a shocker. Algae. You know what algae is? It's what I used to hate in my pool. Now I realize we can turn it into oil. And that's what your original petrol used to be. Longer stories. We'll do those longer. I'm a big energy fan because life comes from energy. So if you have abundant energy, you have abundant life. Picture your electric bill going away. Picture your fuel bill going away to drive. Picture your heating, cooking. Picture all of that. You know how much more money you got in your pocket now? Now think about that times millions of people. You want to see a bubbling economy? Make lots of different forms of energy way more affordable. Doesn't have to be free. But if you want solar panels on your house, or if you want to put an algae farm on your farm and grow your own diesel fuel, you should be able to do that. Regardless of what Mobil Oil says, or Duke Energy, They're gobbling up the Southeast. That's not right. That's not right at all. You should have a choice. You should be able to say, you know what? Should I buy the imported oil gasoline at $1.99 a gallon, or should I go with the local manufacturer that makes it out of algae and actually feeds the algae? Our wastewater from our entire city goes, the wastewater goes into the algae, feeds the algae. We turn the algae into fuel. We get rid of our wastewater. You know what we're doing? We're recreating the cycles of nature. The circle. From rain to ice to vapor. The circle. The same thing with an algae-based biofuel that will eat CO2 as it grows. Well, wait a minute. Hell yeah. It will also use up all the poopy in your neighborhood. It will eat the poopy. Oh, by the way, yes, it doesn't rot in the ground like oil did for millions of years. There's no sulfur in it, so it's sulfur-free fuel. Give me a bill. And you can grow it in brackish water, flat water, pure fresh water, or completely salinated water. You can grow algae farms floating on the ocean. There is no energy shortage. You've been lied to again. Sooner or later, you're going to go, you know what? Enough of us. Learn enough. Our knowledge will then kind of, like V, in the movie V, where he pushes one domino and it hits two and two hit four and so on. That's how knowledge spreads through the world. Maybe it's a cool documentary. Maybe it's a cool podcast. A couple of people hit me. So a private message is going, dude, are you going to do 2 solid hours? And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like Rocky Balboa. Your mama hits harder than that. I'm a big fan of the things that will change the world. And energy is at the top of that. Why did I join Radio Influence? That's easy. I said this earlier. The guys I'm now associated with, I don't know all of them, but I do know they're passionate about their own subject matter and their own topics and their own content. But they're entertaining. And this is a radio network put together by radio people. To me, a radio person is someone who actually collected a paycheck for doing radio. Because there's a lot of podcasters. A lot of people go, yeah, I'm a radio broadcaster on the internet. Ever work in radio? No. No, you're not a radio guy. Radio people were paid to do this. Marketing. Production. Knowing exactly how, and it's called imaging for a reason, how to set up your network, how to put your shows in rotation, how to get them to other points. This network, radioinfluence.com. I know you're tired of the bell. Too bad. It's my show. These are the people I wanted to be associated with. I do a show another night, and eventually there'll be a third show. Because I have a plan. For me, and that's what I want to get to next. I enjoyed my time in terrestrial radio. And if someone were to come to me in this market and say, hey, would you like to try a night show or at least a weekend show? I'd consider it, absolutely, because I do miss being on terrestrial radio. But I really, when I start thinking about it, the freedom I have in this studio, sitting here in my fat man stretch pants, there they are, barefoot, with a cold beverage, and not having to worry about anything I say or pissing off a client, and having the freedom to hit the hard topics that we do on Dangerous Conversation. That's why it's called Dangerous Conversation. We're not here to blow smoke up your ass, but we do know how to have a good time. So for every 2 heavy shows, I guarantee you at least 1 light show. Well, we'll just do, I don't know, human sexuality. You think 1 or 2 topics like government and corruption is, come on now. Who wants to talk about the government all day? Don't you want to talk about some brand new way of pulling energy out of the air? Maybe not new. Maybe someone built a Tesla tower and it's working. Maybe there's a whole town that decided to cut themselves off a grid and flip the old double tall boys at the government and say, you know what, we'll produce 100% of our own energy and we're going to grow a lot of our own food, and we're going to gather and purify a lot of our own water, because we're sick and tired of you telling us how to do things. That's happened. It's happening. It's of course it's happening. Absolutely. You just don't see that on the news. Some of them used to call them communes. Oh, you know, the hippie commune back in the 60s, man. I could never figure out why anybody would listen to Dylan. Fucking sound like a rat caught in a blender. I digress. The reason I want to be part of Radio Influence, seriously, is I'm not done. I'm pretty sure I'm done with terrestrial. I don't miss it. I don't wake up in the morning and wish I was on. But I'm not, you know, I'm kind of a never say never guy. I would never rule it out. But moving forward, as I like to say all the time now, what are we fucking moving backwards? What do you go? So where are you moving backwards now? I don't know. Yes, you had a tragic accident and you got your MCL repaired. So, you know, seriously, your fans want to know, where are you moving backwards from now? I get it. You know, it's probably Jim Rome. You know, talk to me. That was a Jim Rome. And I used to overuse that too. I'd be interviewing a guy. I'd go, talk to me about the offensive line play. And then the mic would come back to me and I'd go, okay. Talk to me about the way the linebackers are responding to the blitz. You know, okay. Yeah. And talk to me. What? No. Mumble to me. Whisper to me. Give me Morse code with you. Of course you're going to talk to me. Some of the words we use in media, I don't know. Moving forward, talk to me. Talk to me about moving forward. Yuck. But I still miss the live interaction of radio. I really do. I'm sitting here going over some Twitter messages here. I'm not going to do anything live today on the show. I just wanted to introduce myself a little bit to the brand new audience. First day of school over here. And get a chance to talk about some things. And I haven't even hit on that metaphysical thing yet. I just did a show on my other network about the near-death experience, which has absolutely fascinated me since the mid-90s when I started reading books about it. But the concept of the Matrix. Why do I use that red pill intro? Because there's the reality of what I think is going on in America versus the reality of what really is going on in America. Okay? The reality versus the Matrix, the fake part. Well, to me, you could also say that about, is this solid a solid? Well, you know, microscopes are very powerful. Tell me it's 99.9999% ether. It's just a bunch of atoms vibrating and electrons flying around. But most, you know, almost all of it is just blank space. So how is it solid? Quantum mechanics goes even farther and says it's not only atoms, but those atoms are made up of something. And now you get into the Hadron Colliders and they're getting smaller and smaller and smaller particles. A piece of a piece of a piece of a piece. They're getting all the way down to what somebody like Dr. John Hagelin calls the unified field. And to Star Trek fans, Star Wars fans, it would be the Force. The energy that binds and makes everything. The energy and the Force in this microphone is the same energy in the Force in my finger that just smacked it. And there is an illusion of separation between this microphone and my finger. Even though my finger is 5 inches away from the mic right now, technically, the molecules in the air that are connected to the molecules in my finger are also connected to the molecules in the microphone. So therefore, my finger in the quantum field is literally connected to this and that. Everything is connected. The Force, the fabric. So you take that, and then you'd kind of say, like, well, if there's this earth, and then there's this, you know, to use a religious term, I try to stay away from them, but if this earth and there's a heaven, in other words, there's two planes, there's two realities, maybe there's a veil in between the two, but aren't they the same thing? Aren't they connected? Are they not connected? And this is where science right now and metaphysics and a little bit of spirituality are all kind of meeting in this really neat conversation. And that's why I'm a big fan of that stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the probes that we're sending out, the idea that we're now getting really good detailed information on moons that are circulating around Saturn or Jupiter, and those moons have water on them. We're obviously finding out more and more information about Mars. We're finding out about our close proximity. And we're learning more about how the Earth was formed and how stars form and how the planets form around those stars. We're now starting to aim probes at far distant stars and sense a wobble in them or a dimming of the light, which means a big planet is moving in front of them and dimming. You know, that's called the Kepler. And we're starting to detect, we can't see them with the naked eye, but we're now starting to see the effects of a planet moving around a star, which would now verify, yes, we're not the only solar system. Do you think we're the only star with planets? Of course not. And there's billions, there's about a billion stars in our galaxy alone. And there's billions, you know, Carl Sagan, Jodie Foster, pick your poison there. How could you not be fascinated by that? To think and just look up at the night sky and go, okay, that star is like 10 million light years away. In other words, the light I'm seeing is taking 10 million years to get to me. That's pretty big. But maybe there's a planet and maybe there's beings that live there. Maybe they swim under the surface and are really intelligent. But the upright apes put them in little small museums and make them perform for fish. Not only are we not the only creatures in this universe, we aren't even nearly where we could be when it comes to how we treat the world and how the world treats us and how we treat each other. If we can't even take a killer whale or a dolphin and appreciate these are intelligent, sentient beings with very strong family ties in their pods. These pods stick together for life. They're like the Waltons under the water. Everybody lives on the same mountain. Grandpa and great-grandpa and all the little baby killer whales all live together. And we take them and we put them in a big swimming pool and we make them jump for fishing and then we clap and we take pictures in front of them. How exactly? Seriously, tell me how advanced we are versus where we could be as a species. We're told completely sunk into our own technical junk. We're in love with our tech. And it's pretty cool. I'm talking to you because of that tech. But as far as who you are, what you are, what you think you are, where you think you are, what you think's going on, how many different topics, that's why this show never runs out of content. Ever. There's never a boring day on this program. It's impossible. There's so many fascinating things to explore. And since if you're just... Wait a minute. You know, I think I might want to play one song. Yeah. Or do you think I should just do the two solid? I don't know. If you think you're... excuse me. If you... I'll give you a little challenge. You listen to this podcast for 4 weeks, and you're going to get 2 hours, not one. And by week two or week three, we'll be booking some guests. And if this isn't for you, don't listen. If it is, do me a favor. Tell other people about it. Because here in the Tampa Bay area, some people know who I am, and some people know the type of show I have done and what I hope to do with it. But not everybody does. Not everybody can walk into podcasting like a Joe Rogan or Jay Moore or an Adam Carolla with already a built-in audience following you to this medium versus someone who did local radio in one market. It's a good start, and it will be a great start. and getting associated with these people on this program at RadioInfluence.com is going to be a lot of fun. But I could use your help. If you like a show, go over to your Facebook or your Twitter or your whatever. Just copy and paste and go, hey, check out this podcast. Check out this guy. Or check out this show. Check out this topic. Or check out this great interview. We do it all here. And yes, I had a crew when we were sitting in the IO studios. I had the same producer every night. And my crew would vary from about, I would say, 7 to 8 different people that would mostly be in on two nights. So I never really had the same crew two nights in a row. But I really found some radio diamonds in the rough. And they'll be joining me on this show in the future. It will just be a Skype interview. Or, you know, some of these guys are doing radio on their own now. I'm launching like 1,000 ships over here. So I'm really looking forward to this process. I'm really, I mean, seriously looking forward to being part of RadioInfluence.com because, see, it slows down my, I made a pledge. I'm sticking to it. Deal with it. That in the coming weeks, you will get inside the 8-year-old inside of my head. See, sometimes you're going to get Forrest Gump, you know, first day of school. And sometimes you're going to get Billy Madison, first day of school. So it's just who I am. It's what I do. Now, if you need to follow, ledgeradio@gmail.com. Bump me an email. Ask me a question. Do whatever. ledgeradio@gmail.com. ledgeradio@gmail.com. And no, there won't be a Carlin's Corner tonight. Okay, there will be one next week. I'll tell you about that in a second. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's LedgeDCRadio. So it's at LedgeDC, as in Dangerous Conversation, Radio. Hit me on Twitter. If you want to follow me on Facebook, two places. You can go to my real name, my given name, at Scott, LEGERE. That's /, you know, Facebook /, Scott, LEGERE. You can disagree with me all you want on my Facebook page. The moment you personalize it and start calling me names and stuff, you're gone. I don't have time. I do not waste my time with trolls. I really don't. You want to get into a good conversation or a disagreement and come with evidence or come with why you think about things, I'm all about it. But the moment you get into name calling or get abusive, I don't care if you've done a fifth of Jack and it's Friday night at 2 a.m. and you just want to try to fuck with me, I'm not going to deal with it. I don't have to. I'm not going to. So if you want to be cool on social media, find me at those places. If you don't, I will cut you loose very quickly. I've lost my patience with trolls. I don't deal with trolls very nicely. Again, pick a subject matter. Tell me why you think I'm wrong. Tell me why you think one way. Tell me all day long. All day long we'll do that. Okay? But the moment anybody contacts me in social media and starts to, you know, drop, you know, I got called a bigot the other day. And anybody who knows me, anybody that knows me knows him, Ledge, a bigot. You're definitely barking up the wrong tree. I'm no Martin Luther King. Okay? But I do realize that we're all one beautiful race, a tiny pill floating around, a little ball of hydrogen surrounding another big pill. And you know, billions of those pills floating in a big, anybody who thinks they're better or superior of a race or a religion, stop listening to me right now and go away. Because I won't waste my time with you. There are too many good, smart, articulate, open-hearted people out there. And they are connecting. And they're sharing ideas and concepts. And they're also bringing a positive message towards people. The 80 part of the 20. Don't let mainstream media constantly focus on you. Oh, believe me, everywhere. And we're going to get into something called astroturfing. Okay? We're going to get into that. Not this show. I wanted to, before I run out of time here, I want to play one quick song, explain what kind of music I play on this show for the majority of the show, not all of it, but for the majority of the show. I play unsigned bands, unsigned acts, rock band, a hip hop duo, just acoustic, female, male. When I started doing Dangerous Conversation not too long ago, about 2.5, coming up in 3 years, I literally, you know, I am doing 2 straight hours here. I'm starting to feel a little bit. Yeah, that's all right. That's cool. I literally asked out loud, where are all the great bands? You know, like the 60s and 70s had these bands that would talk about social issues. Where are these bands now? You know, this is 2011. And we started asking out loud, and you know, that social media web went out, and we got one artist in, and he told us, hey, make sure you check out this band. And his name was Jordan Page. And he goes, just check out this band named Rebel Inc. They're all at Baltimore. Yeah, they sound a little bit like Rage, but you know what? Honestly, they're really good live. They're really good live. And you need to see them, and you need to have them on your show. And lo and behold, one of the many different acts we've played on Dangerous Conversation, unsigned because their music is in your face when it comes to what the government may be up to, or a corporation, or a religion, or, you know, it doesn't matter. Music that is not afraid of pushing boundaries is what rock music used to be. It's what all music used to be in the 60s and 70s. I mean, there was disco, but there was an awful lot of good introspective lyrical content out there. And not everybody was Bob Dylan, and not everybody was the Beatles, and not everybody was, you know, but there was a movement, and music can move people to at least think about a topic. And just to prove that, I'm going to demonstrate that right now. Scott
Ledger. Hey, this is Trip from Orlando. You're listening to Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
I mean, this is a gab fest. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Dangerous Conversation.
Hey, Old Man River, zip it or I'll break your hip.
Scott Ledger.
But I haven't tried my Wolfman Jack Lady Shaver yet.
Dangerous Conversation.
Take this whole world, we're burning down. This
Some of you know me as Mikey Gaga. Some of you know me as Joey Boombatz.
He's crazy, he's a fool, but he's not a liar.
This is not a conversation for children.
Look, I don't think you're crazy. I know you're not a terrorist. I know you're just an ordinary guy who's popped his top. But you must connect with those people out there.
Dangerous conversations.
That was a quick 2 hours. I think we'll call this the reference show, or just basically, what the hell is Dangerous Conversation? Who's the host? What's he about? What's the show about? And I'm like a fungus. I'll grow on you slowly. I will. You know, might be need to just like stock up on some tenactin or something, but I will. I will do two things: prod you to think, and prod you to keep an open mind. You can be skeptical all you want. Skepticism is awesome. Cynicism is boring. You want to be a skeptic? You want to discount something that's in, you know, embedded in history? And you can find, flat earthers, pay attention, something you think is worth talking about? I know there are people talking about the earth being flat. I know it's 2015. I know. But yes, keep an open mind, because maybe it's round. You know? I'll tell you what, let's wait till the sun comes up and then we'll think about it. The point of Dangerous Conversation is think for yourself, but keep an open mind. That's what makes a ledge head. That's what a ledge head is. I am Scott Ledger. I hope you enjoyed the first of what will be many broadcasts / podcasts right here at Radio. Oh, wait a minute. How do I not have that ready? I apologize. It's been a little while. Okay. And I'll say that goodbye again. It's going to be great to be part of all those shows. Like I said, you know, I mentioned them early. The MMA Insiders, Fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, Independent Roundtable, On the Beach. And there's so many of them. Fight Time, Big Fight Weekend, Three Dog Thursday, Off the Air, Scrum Sports. And, of course, right here at Dangerous Conversation at RadioInfluence.com. You guys have a good one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
This is Vincent Hill. You've seen me on CNN, HLN with Nancy Grace, Al Jazeera, and True Crime with Aphrodite Jones, just to name a few. Now I've got my own show on Radio Influence, and I'll be taking you beyond the badge. I'll take you behind the scenes and into the minds of those following and investigating America's top news stories. Beyond the Badge with me, Vincent Hill, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and the Radio Influence family. Let's enjoy this ride as I take you beyond the badge.